This is CliffCentral.com. Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life, with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, Lionel Makoko-Tlela. Welcome, Lines.
Dumela, Gary, and Dumera to our guests and our podcasters today.
Today, we're going to answer some burning questions. Let me give you a few of them, Lines. They are ticklers, these. The first one, the body corporate is trying to prevent us from keeping our dog in our townhouse.
That's going to be a very...
There we go. The question is, can these mongrels do this? And you're going to hear how doggies Fricky and Snippy won a court case in the Pretoria High Court, allowing them to stay with their owner. And the owner, Alliance, was barking mad when he took the body corporate to court. So all this is going to come out. I think he won the case as well. We'll talk about that a little later.
Great.
Also, one of the questions, the body corporate is doing things like increasing levies by a large amount, installing fiber, replacing the lift, all at a hell of a cost, and all without permission of the owners.
Well,
we're going to talk, Lions. Mm-hmm. When does the body corporate not need the permission of the owners, and can they go full steam ahead willy-nilly without first consulting the owners? And here we're going to distinguish between maintenance and repairs on the one hand and improvements on the other.
Mm.
Also, one more question. There's a woman, she writes in, she says, there's a woman in my father's retirement village who picks on one person until she's made their life a misery, then she moves on to the next. Some have sold their retirement homes because of her. Right now, she's gunning for my dad. What can I do? And maybe we should say, if she's gunning for your dad, get him a shotgun. As you will have gathered, Lides, these are questions that revolve around sectional title issues, including retirement units. And it's a show not to be missed by anyone involved with sectional title, including buyers, property developers, managing agents, owners, trustees, estate agents, and whoever, and just for pure fabulous entertainment, as usual. Yeah. Joining me today, we've got another specialist. Her name is Marina Constance. She's the director of bbmlaw.co.za. She's a sectional title specialist. She's also a co-author, Lines, of a book called Demystifying Sectional Title, which he says speaks to the layperson about their rights and obligations in sectional title complexes. A very warm welcome to you, Marina.
Thank you so much, Gary. It's lovely to be here, and Lionel.
Thank you very much for gracing us with your presence again, ma'am.
The questions that have been asked today have been posted by members of Legal Talk South Africa, and I think you all know by now that we've teamed up with Ray Green, who's the founder of Legal Talk SA, and between them, with their Facebook page membership, it's going up every day. I think they're up to close to 123,000 members now, and us here at Cliff Central, with our millions of podcasters, we really are developing quite a name for ourselves on legal issues.
Certainly, and the partnership is just... every single week, it's just increasing. It's fantastic. And we love the post that the people are actually posting on the website, just so that we can actually assist them with some legal opinions.
Our email address, law@cliffcentral.com. The Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg, Lines, and our Twitter handle.
It's @HertzLaw, HERTZLAW.
Okay, let's deal with some of the questions that have come in. We're going to go through them quick and fast. So the first one comes from a lady called Michelle. She says, I quote, I own a unit in a sectional title complex and had to have a water leak repaired in my kitchen courtyard, as well as have the pressure valve replaced. She asks, was I responsible for the costs involved, or can I claim it back from the body corporate? Both the water pipe that was leaking and the pressure valve are on the outside kitchen wall. And I underline that. I understood that everything outside my doors belonged to the complex, she says. Now, we're going to have a few of these with leaks and all the rest. Marina, let's just take you on this one. What's the answer?
Yes, well, Gary, the thing is, with the water ingress is an increasing problem in all our complexes at the moment. In fact, probably out of all the matters on my desk, probably about 80% because of the way a lot of these schemes are put together quite quickly. Yeah. The thing with this question is that we have to establish where that leak is. Very, very important. A leaking pipe could be within my section, or it could be just on that 50 percentile of the wall outside, which means that it would be body corporate responsibility. So you get plumbers, for example, who would go out and do dye testing to see where that leak is.
Yes.
If the leak is within my section, then I'm responsible to fix the leak, and that's part of my section, and as an owner, I've got a really huge responsibility to fix, because that can also affect the integrity of the entire structure if it starts seeping down into other units.
Mm.
If it's not, and in this situation, it sounds to me like it's probably not. It sounds more like a body corporate issue. It's on the outside. If the plumber assesses that it's on the outside and that the problem is there, the body corporate is responsible, and the trustees have to drive this. The body corporate is responsible to fix the problem, and it's the terminology is from whence it emanates. So fix it up and get it done. And they have to do it quite quickly as well.
What happens if my plumber says one thing and the body corporate gets their plumber and they say another? That lands up in a squabble.
Well,
doesn't
it? That's why I'm busy 90% of my day. there could be differing opinions, and then we need to look at how a dispute's resolved.
There's a man who responded to this, John Brando. He says, in sectional title, everything on the outside of your walls are common property and the responsibility of the owners via the collective entity, homeowners associations or body corporates. So he says, all owners pay levies to this end. Is he right? Is that kind of
yes,
got
well,
it right?
Yes, for the most part, yes. Yeah. So, for example, the pressure valve is a physicality on the outside of the wall, and that you can say, yes, is body corporate.
Yeah.
But pipes are often not on the outside of the wall. Pipes are within a section or under the ceiling or within a slab. So that's when you've really got to assess. That becomes a bit tricky.
Yeah. Let's take another one from Desiree, kind of on the similar point. Hi, we have a unit in a sectional title. Our neighbor has leaking pipes. She says her neighbor does. And we have a history of him doing half-assed repairs and ignoring our requests. We want to repaint our flat, and obviously his leaks need to be fixed first. And she says she can't wait forever for this to take place. We may be forced, and she says, to go to the small claims court, which I'm going to talk to you about. She says, we are still waiting for the last repair to be sorted. Our flat is starting to look shabby, and we want all this sorted out.
Well, she's definitely got a point and the right to quick action. That neighbor, if the pipes are within his section, that neighbor must fix the pipes. So if the neighbor doesn't fix the pipes, what can happen?
Yep.
She can go to the trustees and say to them, look, there's a lovely provision in the Sectional Titles Act which says that those trustees can write a letter to the owner saying, we need you to fix your section, fix what's in your section. And that can be anything in the section. It doesn't actually only relate to pipes. So fix it. In the old act, he used to have 30 days in which to fix it. In the new act, there's no 30 days. So now, on written demand, he must fix it. If he doesn't fix it, the trustees can then get their own guys to go in and fix it and place it onto a separate account for that owner's account, not on his levy account.
She says something about the small claims court. That's a bit antiquated. That's not somewhere we'd go.
It's not really. We're not in the realms of small claims court so much. Just in respect of specialisation, I think there are much better places to go now.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about if an owner fails to maintain their section, and this is very common, isn't it?
It really is.
It's a severe problem. I mean, you look after your little place, and the neighbor's just letting his rot.
Yes.
And it's causing a problem next door.
So it's something that's got to be taken seriously, because whilst your body corporate may be strong, it's really only as strong as its weakest link, actually.
Mm.
So you've got to look out for that. And again, whatever in the old act, it used to say as well that if somebody is not looking after their section or their exclusive use area, the body corporate can go in and fix it themselves. Now it only says section, which I think has been an error, so they're going to fix that up. But ultimately, the body corporate must use their rights. A lot of the time, trustees are a little bit nervous to go into a complex. I mean, I had one trustee going in with an electrical contractor who had to fix some wiring pretty urgently. And the next day, we got a lawyer's letter to say that a diamond ring had been stolen from that unit. Mm. So my advice would be to go in with a few people and make affidavits that nothing was taken and that kind of thing, because you can be vulnerable as a trustee.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. Lines, you wanted to comment on that? Or
no, it's just quite interesting how people can actually make up stories.
But you know, Lionel, as well, I must just add that there's an increased duty on trustees under this new legislation, which came in October last year. So trustees really have to step up to a different kind of level of liability and responsibility in sectional title, which they must be aware of.
Okay, let's talk about, we're dwelling on the same point, which is really important, the body corporate. Someone is increasing the levies, and someone's installing fiber, and somebody is repairing the lift.
Mm.
Okay. Who is doing all this, and what are the rights of the owners? Take us through what's going on and what should happen.
You know what, Gary, I think if we have to be sympathetic to owners, sometimes you feel like you're a little bit out of control as an owner. You don't really, like you said, they're just decisions being made on your behalf and you're not sure. Mm. You have the absolute right not to buy into sectional title or into a community scheme now. Mm. If you do, then there are certain rules and regulations, and there is some measure of control that you're losing, because a very small little body of people within your complex called the trustees have quite a few rights. They really do. Mm. And they can do a few things. Trustees are responsible for maintenance and repair and the operational running of the scheme, and they've got to act in the best interests of that scheme. So where can you restrict them? Where do owners have a little bit of strength? At the annual general meeting. Because there's something on the agenda, there's an item on the agenda, which is called restrictions and directions. So that's where you've got to control your trustees a little bit. So you can say, I don't want you to spend more than 20,000 Rand without coming back to us, even on maintenance and repairs issues. But then again, flexibility is the order of the day. You've got to be flexible, because trustees can't come running backwards and forwards every time they need to spend money. So maintenance and repairs fall squarely within the realm of trustees. And trustees themselves can be taken on by owners if they don't maintain. Building in Killarney, a whole lot of pensioners in the building didn't want to repair the gutters. They're on fixed incomes, not happy to spend the money.
Mm-hmm.
A youngster moves into the building, very hip and happening.
He wants fiber.
He wants fiber. He would never mind gutters fixed. And we won that arbitration about 2 years ago to say that the body corporate has a responsibility to maintain.
Mm.
And the trustees carry out that duty. But there are times when the trustees are not involved by themselves. So, for example, let's take fiber. Fiber, you're messing with common property because you're laying cables.
Mm.
And you are improving the complex. You're improving common property. So what you're doing is it reasonably necessary or not reasonably necessary? Because that's what the wording of the act is.
Mm.
If it's not reasonably if it's reasonably necessary, which I feel it is, because we're going into a new era and technology is moving fast, then you need a special resolution from the body corporate to enter into a contract with your fiber network supplier.
And what does that mean? That every owner's got to vote on this one?
75% of a quorum.
Okay.
At a special meeting.
So the body corporate and the trustees can't just go ahead and install it.
No.
They have to...
A lot of them have.
That's the concern.
A lot of them have.
You know, people are crying about this. They're saying, you know, all of a sudden I'm landed with fiber that I don't really want. You know, I'm happy with what I have.
Yes, yeah.
So it's a problem.
It is. I mean, you know, the guys are getting way leave orders, the fiber guys are getting way leave orders to come into different suburbs and lay fiber. But when you're starting to go into a complex or a homeowners association or whatever, you've got to get consent. It's not like you can just walk in. We got a letter the other day from a fiber company to say, if the homeowners association doesn't allow us in, within 3 days, we're getting a court order to come in.
Really?
Yeah, and I was hoping that they would try that, actually, because they wouldn't have won it.
No, for sure not.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, so for people who have been landed with having to pay for fiber, you've answered the question. There's got to be a special vote on that one.
Yeah, otherwise that contract's not valid.
Yeah. What happens if the body corporate trustees have gone ahead and done this without permission?
Well, then you must decide. You know, nobody really wants to go to litigation these days. It's expensive. Mm. So if I don't want to connect the fiber to my unit, then I don't have to.
But don't I get charged for it by the...
There is a charge. Sometimes the fiber companies are putting these structures in for free. Mm-hmm. And then they're only charging the people who want to be linked up to the fiber.
Okay. Yeah.
So in that case, then maybe
then it's
there's
okay.
No...
Yeah, then it's fine. As long as you're not paying for something you're not using.
100%.
What about the lift? People or whatever, so the gardens, the common property, the gardens... Yes. You know, can they go and put expensive flowers in or...
Trustees can do the, almost the, not bare minimum, but what's reasonable. They are entitled in terms of the Act to provide recreational facilities and lawns, etc. Mm. But if you are going to go and import beautiful pots from Bali, like the one the chairman wanted to do, and bring them in, then that's a different story. That becomes a luxurious improvement. Mm. Well, it used to be called that. Now it's called a not reasonably necessary improvement. Mm. And then it becomes a unanimous resolution by the body corporate. So if it's a tennis court you want to put in or a swimming pool, that's not reasonably necessary. That's something a little bit higher that you need more sort of a bigger vote for. It carries more
weight. For all the people that are bitching and moaning, why don't they become trustees themselves? Isn't that the answer?
Well, that's what I always
say. Well, how do you become a trustee?
You are nominated before an annual general meeting and you're appointed. And I think it's a lot easier to stand on the outside and moan and complain.
Mm. Yeah.
That's my experience. And whenever we're having a fight or a dispute, I always encourage the complainer to actually do some work.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Okay, let's talk about Diane's posting. This one would drive anyone dilly. She says here, just a quick one, there's a woman in my father's retirement village who apparently picks on one person until she's made their life a misery, then she moves on to the next. Some have sold their homes because of her, which is quite sad. Right now she's gunning for my dad, who has a degree of dementia, but not yet ready for frail care. Can I get a lawyer's letter, this and that, to get her to stop? Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Who do I speak to? She says, this is quite a concern, this.
Gary, if I can tell you, and Lionel, you wouldn't believe, actually, how many times this happens in complexes where you get that one person. In fact, I had a conference call about 2 weeks ago. Two trustees had to phone from London, high-powered business people who are being completely driven crazy by a lady who is just making all sorts of complaints and writing 50-page letters every second night to them to complain. So it's common. I think it has to be nipped in the bud. You've got to teach people how to treat you as owners or as trustees. And there are two routes to go in this case. The first route is to write a letter to create a paper trail to maybe give her the opportunity to stop, to mediate internally, to say, listen, what's your problem? Let's talk about it. Maybe one of the trustees can come and help us, you know, come to some solution. Always better to try internal mediation first. But then, again, you can go the court route. You can get your interdict or your binding over a peace order. But then the new way that we've been chatting about as well is the community scheme ombud service, which became effective in October last year.
Let's talk about that in detail.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Ombuds Office is not a new thing. It's not, just hasn't come out of the blue. It's been 20 years in the making in South Africa. We've had research and investigation done all over the world, and we've taken the best practices from New South Wales, for example, Singapore, where they've got Ombud Service, and it's transformational. It's giving access to justice for people who are... you have been hijacked in buildings, in where the buildings have been hijacked, for example, where they're dealing with really awful trustees who just, you know, fob everything off or give it to lawyers and make it difficult for them because they don't have money. And I'm seeing it at the Ombud at the moment because we've already heard that the Ombud service has heard 612 disputes already.
Wow.
That, you know, it's working. People need a place to come and vent and discuss the difficulties, and they need a decision.
Okay, so it's called the Community Schemes Ombud Services.
Mm.
Yes,
yep.
CSOS. You happen to be on the board.
Yes, I am.
As well.
Yes.
Okay, if I take a dispute to them, I say, look, there's this neighbor in my of mine who's making my life a misery. I fill out, I go onto the website, I fill out a form. How long is the process?
Well, you fill out your form, you pay your 50 rand, and the Ombud will then decide whether or not your situation has merit, because it can be withdrawn. The whole process from beginning to end is taking about 40 days at the moment. When it first started last year, you know, there was a backlog and there had been an onslaught of queries. So there have been teething issues, but now in a meeting about 2 weeks ago, the Ombud even mentioned that any adjudication must be, the awards must be given within 2 weeks after hearing. So that's a nice time frame. I mean, it's much, much better than having to go to court and, you know, waiting and having delays and postponements. And attorneys are more or less left out of the equation, which actually makes it a lot easier in terms of not having shrewd delays or technical you know, postponements.
So what happens is both people are brought before the adjudicator.
Yes, so then they're also experts can be appointed and investigators the Ombud can appoint. The Ombud can also come to your complex to see the adjudicator on behalf of the Ombud.
I mean, do they come and see the leaks? Do they actually come
out
and
inspect? They can if they feel it's necessary.
Okay.
And if they won't be are not allowed in by an owner, they can get the South African police to accompany them. That's one of their powers.
Okay.
And the adjudicator will hear the matter and then give an award. Before the adjudication, the Ombud service might also think that a mediation is better. Mediation is, again, mediatory. Let's come to a solution. Let's try and see if we can work it out. In many cases, in sectional title, nobody can come to any solutions. So then it goes to adjudication.
Okay, assuming that one of the neighbors is a problem, he's noisy. Mm-hmm. Lionel, you've got a terrible neighbor.
Oh, yeah.
A noisy neighbor.
Another one of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
You report it to the Ombud and they will make, they will adjudicate and they'll say, you stop being noisy.
Yes, they will. Thing. Even if you're not there. So if you refuse to go, an award can be made in your absence.
Excellent. Hmm. What happens? What's the, has it got teeth? What's the effect of that?
Well, so now we've got an award in our hands and the person continues. The aim is to talk to the Department of Justice so that all the Ombud's awards can be made court orders quickly. So we don't have to go through the whole court process to get orders made. Like they similarly, they've done it at the rental tribunal. They have those orders made. Yeah. So the Ombud is busy talking to the Department of Justice now.
And that we hope will become a court order.
Oh, it must, yeah.
Yes.
It must become a court order. It's a very easy process. They stamp it. It becomes a court order. Mm. So Lionel, if you have a problem again, then that person will be, your neighbor will be in contempt.
Can
go to jail.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's great. This is not just with neighbor on noisy neighbor issues. It's on every issue to do with sectional title.
Absolutely. Any contravention.
Yeah.
You know, if you've built something illegally, if you've got a pet that's on the property illegally, that can also, that the sheriff might be able to come and remove your pet if you've got a...
Well, while we're on that subject, let's talk about pets. What actually is the law on that one? Can I keep my pet... with me?
Well, again, it depends on the building's rules. You would find those rules under the conduct rules of your scheme. Mm. The conduct rules need to get a compliance certificate from the Ombud, just to mention to you. You have to send in your rules to get a compliance certificate. The model conduct rules say that you're allowed to have pets with the written permission of the trustees, which permission should not be unreasonably withheld.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be conditions put to that permission. So you must walk the dog on a lead, you must follow it around with a poop scoop, whatever it is. So that's the general rule. But if I'm a complex, if there's a complex and I'm a person in the complex, together with my fellow owners who really, we don't like dogs or cats, we can by special resolution change the rule to say, no pets allowed. Mm-hmm. Finished.
Mm.
And that would be then a rule, and it would get a compliance certificate from the Ombud. An interesting change in the new legislation, and a really welcome one, is that guide dogs are now allowed in a scheme without having to get trustee permission.
Oh, yeah.
There was a case in two or three years ago, Snippy, and I mentioned the other dog's name. What happened was the body corporate had kind of closed their eyes to dogs being on the property, and then the new owner came with their two dogs, and they refused them to keep the dogs. So they applied to court.
Yes.
And the court said, well, because you've closed your eyes to other dogs, you've got to allow these in.
Mm.
And that's how they
want this work. You've got to treat owners consistently. Yeah. That is a part of the act. And also, there's that those little words, permission shall not be unreasonably withheld in your model rules. If you've got those words, then those trustees, you really have to put your mind to the matter.
Well, they may say the dog is a barking dog and is a problem. That could be one of the reasons.
Well, it could be. Absolutely. You can withdraw permission.
Yeah.
But if there's a little old lady coming in with a dog because her husband has passed away and she's had the dog for 15 years and it's a tiny little dog, then the trustees might want to allow that. Mm. Or in another case, I had a Great Dane came into the complex and everyone was up in arms. How could you bring a Great Dane into the complex? In the meantime, when you look at the evidence, the Great Dane was almost 16 years old, just sat around all day, didn't bark, it wasn't a nuisance, and there was a very, very sentimental attachment to the owner.
We have a request here, or it's a posting. How much interest on arrear levies can be charged?
New Act talks about the maximum rate allowed by the National Credit Act. Mm-hmm. So as at about June, I think this was it June last year, it was at 28% as unsecured credit.
Really?
Yeah.
So if you pay late, you
need a written resolution, Gary. Those trustees have got to have a written resolution about interest. Mm. Our firm collects a lot of arrear levies,
yes.
And if you're going to court to try and get a judgment,
mm-hmm.
the court will want to see, if you're claiming a high interest rate, they want to see the written resolution on that. Otherwise, you're only entitled to the
9%.
Yeah, 10.5% more interest rate.
Mm.
Yeah.
How do you get the special resolution?
Well, the resolution is a trustee's resolution. So after a meeting, an AGM, all the trustees need to do is just get together by majority, write a resolution on interest. Can even be compounded. There's case law to that effect, but you can't recover it.
What about the legal fees that are payable by someone who hasn't paid their
yes.
levies?
Good question, and causing a real furor at the moment.
Mm.
In the past, so a unit owner owes money, the managing agent hands it over to an attorney, the attorney issues summons, does all the legal work, and that legal bill would have been taken and would have been put unilaterally onto the debtor's account.
Yes.
Interest would have run on that, and there was abuse of that situation because all of a sudden the legal fees start becoming more than the capital amount of the levies.
Mm-hmm.
So this new act has sorted that out quite crisply, in that they're saying now that you can, obviously you can go to an attorney to collect arrear levies, to deal with contraventions, and the lawyers can charge, but you have to tax a bill. The lawyers have to tax a bill, and only that taxed amount can be placed on the owner's account.
Okay.
So that's a lesser amount. It's like a medical aid kind of party amount.
What about the fees of the management agent? They write letters to non-payers and they say, pay up.
Mm.
Can they charge for that?
Managing agents have also been stopped in their tracks by the Debt Collectors Act. So a couple of years ago, they all had to register under the Debt Collectors Act because they are actually, in fact, starting the process to collect debt.
Mm.
And they're collecting the money. So there's a tariff of fees that they can charge. I think it's R17.50 for a letter, because before they were charging.
Sorry, where is this tariff?
It's in the Debt Collectors Act at the back.
Oh, okay, they're entitled to those costs.
Yeah, they're very little.
Mm. Yeah, so anyone who hasn't paid their levies and maybe in arrears, and you get hit with costs, please go to Debt Collectors Act.
Yes, just to check on the managing agent's fees.
Yeah, check on those fees.
Yeah, also another thing, just importantly, I think I must talk about for your listeners, is the illegal cutting of electricity. Right. It's something that the Ombud is not allowing at all. Even if you're in arrears with your levies, a lot of the managing agents would cut off electricity, which we know works. But
is it still being done? Are people still doing that?
I mean, a few of them.
Really? Are there lines?
Even the 20 municipality officials are actually coming to cut electricity now.
Well, the thing is that's different. Yeah,
right.
The body corporate is not a supplier of electricity, so they don't have the right to cut electricity.
What about water? Can anyone?
No. Any service, even for example, like your access card to your complex.
Yes.
If you don't pay your levies in a complex in Durban, we dealt with a case, the trustees took away the guy's access card. So he had to sign in every time he came to the complex because he hadn't paid his levies. And we acted for him and we won the case, which said that you can't take away services like that. You've got your route to go. Mm. You either go to court, you can go to the Ombud to recover. And bodies, corporate and homeowners associations need to treat themselves as businesses.
Mm.
They hold huge assets, and you need to strike while the iron's hot if someone hasn't paid.
You do a lot of these collections as well. Are the people still in their units while you're suing them, or have they moved out?
A lot of them are tenant occupied.
Still tenant.
Yeah. The investors are often the ones who aren't paying.
So, I mean, people can sit there for 6 months or 9 months without paying before you can kind of do anything.
Well, we can attach the unit at the end of the day.
Can you set it in execution for non-payment of...
Yeah.
How long is that whole process from beginning to end?
Probably about 10 months from beginning to end.
So people are actually sitting, not paying their levies and...
Look, you do recover everything at the end because the buyer of the unit has got to pay the full amount of the outstanding levy to get a clearance certificate.
What about people who just fall on hard times and pay their levies?
And it's getting worse and worse.
We know.
What
should they do?
I think they mustn't run away. They mustn't put their heads in the sand. We understand, the managing agents understand. It just becomes a problem when promises are made and then they're not kept. You know, a lot of people at the moment have got financial issues. And you need to sit down and try to structure a realistic plan without fobbing off the body corporate, because that's when it starts becoming a personal thing. And they start saying, well, we're subsidizing you for staying here. You can't afford it. And
if you've lost your job and you go to the body corporate and say, I'm sorry, I can't pay, are they obliged to assist or can they shoo you away?
They're not obliged to assist. You're obliged to pay your levies. So, you know, it just depends on each body corporate.
Could you complain to the Ombud if they didn't try and assist you?
There's not a dispute. You owe the money.
Yeah, true.
Wow.
It's tough, eh, Lions?
It's extremely.
Okay. Someone says, we've got so many questions that we need to, we're probably going to run out of time here. Let me just try and find some shorter ones because this one, it comes from Dineshri. She says, I'm the owner of a unit. Every month, besides being charged levies, we are charged an amount of 380 Rand for sewerage. When I queried the charge with the managing agent, I was told that this amount is per unit and they are billed by the municipality. She found it strange, and then she went to the municipality and saw that there was a total of 441 Rand for the entire land, which consists of 456 units. So the developer body corporate is charging, she says, 173,000 per month for sewerage. And so she goes on. The reason I'm raising this one, there were literally dozens and dozens of replies to this. Is someone trying to make a profit out of someone here?
Sometimes that could be the case. But
explain how this profit.
Well,
could be.
you need to see what the council is charging. It sounds a bit low that it's 441 Rand for the entire piece of land in that particular question.
Yes.
So I'm not sure that anything's happening here. But ultimately, the municipality can charge one fee, and then the body corporate as well, or the developer can add on their amount to make a profit. Well, they can't, but they can't. Do. Some of them do.
Yeah.
I've seen with certain managing agents, not all, most of them not, but one in particular used to also add on charges for water that nobody kind of picked up because you don't really know or you haven't asked. You just get one bill, you know. Also, I've seen situations where trustees and they think that all their charges have been paid, like the municipal accounts, where in fact there's been fraud involved on behalf of the managing agent, and they've fabricated documents which show that the municipality has been paid, and then in fact they haven't.
Okay, so if you want to challenge what you've been charged,
yes.
Okay, how do you do that?
Well, it's quite simple. You are, as an owner, you are able to go and view all the documents of record and account of your body corporate.
At the managing agent or wherever?
At the offices of the managing agent, or if you don't have one, at the offices of the trustees.
They cannot refuse to show you the municipal accounts that
not
they receive.
Not at all. You have to be able to see them, and it's your right to be able to see them.
Mm.
If you want copies, you must pay for the copies.
Yes.
You can take them away. You can't say, like a client the other day moaned because he's from overseas, and he said, they must send me everything. They must send me all the books from 2 years ago. Mm. I've asked them. They're not going to send everybody all the books. You must go and inspect them there.
Mm-hmm. I saw somewhere that the Community Schemes Ombuds Services Act, which we've been talking about, provides that everyone has access to all records and accounts.
Mm.
And the failure to provide it is a criminal offence.
It is.
So you're entitled to it. So this business of saying, I think someone's crooking me and all the rest, don't let them crook you. Just go and ask for the paperwork.
Oh, absolutely.
And you'll get your answers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And work it out from there.
There you go.
Yes, Lines?
Yeah, I just wanted to find out, is it also infringing on somebody else's rights if then as a body corporate you decide that we are going to disclose which units are actually not paying their levies, because you may find that the tenants are simply saying, no, we're not getting the service that we are paying for. So as a result, meaning you guys are eating the money and now you want to play open cards. Is it legal?
Very dangerous. Okay. Very dangerous. We've had situations where the trustees will publish a list at the entertainment area.
Hmm.
They'll put up a big list of defaulters.
Hmm.
And that can land you up in trouble as the trustees, because you could be making a defamatory statement.
Absolutely.
If it's wrong.
Yes.
So that's not the way to go. You know, you've got to all live together in harmony at the end of the day.
I think it's defamatory to put the, even if it's true.
Yeah.
What's the purpose of...
Well, it's just to embarrass somebody.
That's all.
Really.
So then you shouldn't embarrass anyone.
No, it's not.
Even if they haven't paid, they've got a reason, maybe. They lost their job, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So in this case, where the tenants want the information, what then happens?
The tenants in body corporate schemes never had any legal relationship with the body corporate at all. Now the tenants fall under the ombud.
Mm.
So the tenants can take it to the ombud. But the tenant has a relationship with his landlord at the end of the day. And if the landlord's not, you know, playing open cards with him, it shouldn't really be for the managing agent to show the tenants anything.
Marina, if we want to Google the ombud, how many ombuds offices are there?
Our main office there is in Rivonia, right next to the Estate Agency Affairs Board.
Mm-hmm.
There's one in Adderley Street in Cape Town and in Umhlanga, well, in Durban.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at a lot of satellite offices, particularly in the Northern Cape and Limpopo at the moment.
Excellent. There's no reason for us as tenants any longer, or sectional title owners, whatever it may be, to take flak from anyone. You've got the ombud to come to your assistance. And you say they are.
I'm finding that they're a professional organization. They've had financial constraints because the money from the units only started coming in January, February, March this year. So to date, they've collected 61 million rand.
Wow.
And with that, I can see a lot of aggressive recruitment, kitting out offices, getting the marketing. You'll start hearing a lot of marketing now in probably end of August, and road shows. By the end of this year, everybody will know who the ombud is.
You also wrote the book, or co-authored, Demystifying Sectional Title. We have a large listenership of lawyers. Is this for lawyers or for the public or for both? Or for
you know, the book was written with a view to making it easy to understand for anybody.
Yeah.
And we're writing the third edition with all the changes. So that should be ready by, say, the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we can get it for Christmas, Lance.
Yeah.
Did you go on holiday, Reed? Do you miss the will it be the same name, just an update?
I hope so, yes.
Before we let you go, there's something in the book that, if we don't buy the book, just tell us quickly, maybe you can give us a few 20-point checklist about buying into sectional title. Mm. Give us the most salient of those.
Well, I think the one thing is that you have to check that that body corporate is financially sound. So you need to ask the seller to, in writing, give you the opportunity to view the books and to see how many arrear levies there are, if the municipalities have been paid. You don't want to walk into a situation where special levies are being raised. I think you need to look at the state of the building from a maintenance point of view. And ask now with the new legislation, you should also be able to ask the seller to provide you with a maintenance, repair and replacement plan, which is a 10-year plan, which every community scheme, every sectional title scheme has to have. That will give you an idea of the cost of what you're going to be paying going forward. Also ask for what's in the reserve fund. Is it a properly run building? Mm. You need to be able to see what's going on
is
there.
Is it solvent, really? Yeah.
That, to me, is the most crucial. Also, just ask about pets and if you can extend the sections. And estate agents also need to get up to speed with all those things.
Before we let you go, anything in particular you want to mention?
I think, from my perspective and in all the roadshows and talks that I've done around the country, there's been some resistance to the ombud because of, well, what is this, another government thing that you're paying and you don't know where your money's going. I think that we have to embrace it. I think it is a transformative institution. Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen already, I think it's taking a lot of pressure or very frustrated owners.
Mm. Good, excellent. You've been listening to Marina Constance, Charistopoli, Marina. She's a director of bbmlaw.co.za. Have a look at their website. There's also some information on that about sectional title.
Yes, we've always got something up.
Excellent. We hope to get you back. Many thanks to you, Lines, and to Palesa in studio with us. And until next week, I'm Gary Hertzberg. Many thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
This is CliffCentral.com.